Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining Parsha Perspectives. Today, we're not going to learn about this past week's Parsha. Instead, we're going to hear a thought about... it relates to Purim. It's based on the Megillas Esther. But in truth, it's actually a very important perspective, a beautiful idea that I want to share with you that is really relates to how we look at the world around us and the people around us and our role in Klal Yisrael. But I'd like to just open with a very, very simple question. In the world of Paras v'Madai, what language was spoken? Well, clearly, they did not speak Lashon HaKodesh. And we have a number of remnants in the Megillah that indicate that they didn't speak Lashon HaKodesh. We have some unusual words that appear nowhere else in Tanakh. Achashdar Pinim, the Ramachim, Pas Shegen. And the Mefarshim explain that these are all Lashon Parsi. I know I have some Persian students, and they speak among themselves, and their families speak Farsi. I'm not sure the Farsi of today is the same as the Persian language spoken in the time of Mordechai and Ahasuerus and Haman. Somebody told me that his wife is from a certain area in Iran and they don't speak Persian, they actually speak Aramaic. So Aramish, some kind of Aramaic dialect. But clearly all the conversations that happened, that are recorded in the Megillah, that involved Haman, that involved Ahasuerus, any of the public declarations, the letters that Ahasuerus wrote, the announcements that were made, were clearly not written in Lashon HaKodesh. Which means that when the authors of Megillas Esther, which is who? Mordechai and Esther, basically. When Mordechai and Esther sat down after the events that transpired in Paras v'Madai, and they wanted to compose the Megillah, they had to pick the words of Lashon HaKodesh to convey whatever the conversations were. They took the conversations and they translated them into Lashon HaKodesh, and they wrote them the way they wanted to present them for, eternalize them in the Megillas Esther. When the Megillah, when Mordechai and Esther wrote the Megillah, which described the announcement that Haman proclaimed as he pranced Mordechai all around Shushan, right? Mordechai sitting on the royal horse, and Haman has to call out, "Kacha ye'aseh lo ish asher hamelech chafetz bikaro." This is the cover that we give to somebody who the king loves. Wait a second. Why did Mordechai choose those words? Remember, it's not a direct quote from Haman, because Haman was talking in Persian. Yet it's translated into Hebrew as, "Kacha ye'aseh lo ish asher hamelech chafetz bikaro." I've heard that song before. Those words, "Kacha ye'aseh lo ish asher something or other," appear earlier in Tanakh. Where do we know those words? "Kacha ye'aseh lo ish asher something or other." Well, if you look, turn to Dvarim, Parshas Ki Tetzeh, and we look at the Parsha of Yibum and Chalitza, there's a very interesting section of the Chalitza ceremony. Pasuk says in Parshas Ki Tetzeh that when a woman gets Chalitza, if her husband dies, leaving her childless without a husband, so she is connected to this man, the Yavam, who has the choice to do either Yibum or Chalitza. Well, if she wants to be free and be able to marry any person in Klal Yisrael, instead of being locked into her husband, her dead husband's brother, her brother-in-law, v'chaltza na'lo, she takes off her shoe, shakes off the shoe off this gentleman's foot, and she has to do something else, and then she has to call out and say the following words, "Kacha ye'aseh la'ish, asher lo yivneh es beis achiv." This is what is done to a man who doesn't want to do yibum and chose to do chalitza. The same exact words, "Kacha ye'aseh la'ish, asher blankety blankety blank." And these are the only two places in Tanakh where this phrase is found. So my question is very simple. When Mordechai wrote Megillas Esther, why did he choose this phrase to describe, as the translation of the proclamation that Mordechai was danced around, was pranced around with Haman leading him and Haman calling out, "Kacha ye'aseh la'ish asher hamelech chafetz bikaro"? Why did he borrow a phrase? Why did he borrow these words from no place other than Chalitza? That's what I'd like to ask. And I want to share with you a beautiful idea that I heard from my brother-in-law this past Shabbos, who heard it from a certain fellow named Mr. Rothenberg. What does it mean that a woman, has the opportunity to get Chalitza, a woman gets Chalitza? Well, before a woman gets Chalitza, this woman whose husband died and is childless is locked. She can't marry anybody. She can't marry anybody in the world. She's chained, she's boxed. once she gets chalitza from this man, if the man chooses to do yibum, if they both are interested, or if not, then he does chalitza for her, that unshackles her, it frees her. She can now marry anyone she wishes. She can marry anybody. That's what chalitza is. Chalitza is really like a free pass. Well, if we look at what was happening with Mordechai, as Mordechai was being driven, riding through Shushan on this royal steed that Haman was pulling, if you think about it, Mordechai's drive through Shushan was also a free pass. And I'll explain what I mean. When did this episode happen that Mordechai was being driven around Shushan with Haman leading him? It was between the first and the second party. That's when, if you look in the Megillah, that's when this event happened. This first, between the first and second party, what was the bigger climate that Klal Yisrael were experiencing? This was in the heat of the gzeira of the death sentence on all of Klal Yisrael. All of Klal Yisrael was subject to death sentence. Minar v'azakein tafanishim. Everyone was going to be killed, including Mordechai. And all of a sudden, in the midst of this national death sentence for all of Klal Yisrael, Mordechai gets dressed up in the royal garments. Mordechai is put on the Sus Asher Rachav Alav HaMelech, a royal steed, and he's pranced throughout the entire Shushan with Haman, the second in command, the one who made that gzeira, saying, "Kach yaseh l'ish Asher HaMelech HaFeis Bikur." Now, I want to ask you a question. Right now, there's a death sentence, and the entire Shushan population, the entire Persian population, when the right day comes, we'll have the right to kill and to plunder all the Jews, murder all the Jews, and take all of their wealth. Do you think anybody, after this happened to Mordechai, would touch Mordechai? Mordechai, if he wanted to, after he was driven around by Haman himself, the proclaimer of the proclamation, and proclaimed with royal clothing and the royal steed that this is the guy who the king loves, no one would dare touch him. If Mordechai wanted, he could have reclused himself, moved up to an ivory tower, and watched in perfect safety, looking down from his tower, as Bnei Yisrael would suffer under the decree, as all of Klal Yisrael would be destroyed, and all of Bnei Yisrael would be murdered, as all of Bnei Yisrael's property would be plundered and pillaged, and he would have been not touched. He would have been a free bird. So in a sense, this prancing, this dancing around Shushan, this royal steed that Haman was pulling, was really a free pass, just like chalitza. And now listen to this. If you open up a Megillah, what are the very next words? After the Megillah writes that Haman called out, "Kach yaseh l'ish asher HaMelech HaFeis Bikuro," the very next words, after Mordechai gets this free pass that he has the option to take, and he could have taken to free himself and to protect himself if he so wished, the very next words are, "Vayoshav Mordechai el Sha'ar HaMelech." Mordechai returns to where he was before, at the king's gate. And what was he doing there? The Gemara in Megillah to Zion and the Rashi on that pasuk says, he returned back, l'sako u'l'ta'aniso, straight back to his sackcloth, straight back to his fasting for the sake of Klal Yisrael. Mordechai HaYehudi teaches us an incredible lesson of what it means to be a Yehudi. He has a free pass. He was just declared to be the king's best friend, and he could be totally safe. The second that's over, he goes straight back. Klal Yisrael in trouble. I'm not taking any free passes. He just like chalitza, same words. Kach yaseh l'ish. He had that chalitza, that freedom, that unshackling. Straight back. L'sako taniso. If a Jew is in trouble, I'm in trouble. I can't be free if there's another Jew out there who's not free. My family, Baruch Hashem, makes a shidduch, and there's one other Jew out there that still needs a shidduch. I didn't make a shidduch. I have money. There's another Jew out there who needs money, who doesn't have money. I don't have money. I had a refuah, Baruch Hashem, but there's someone out there who's still waiting for their refuah. I'm also waiting for a refuah. That's what Mordechai HaTzadik is teaching us. That's what Mordechai Yehudi is teaching us. That you could be free, you could be great for yourself, but if there's another Jew in trouble, you're not a free person. You go straight back to L'sako L'ta'aniso. And as Chazal, as the Beis Din after the time of Mordechai and Esther, sat down to create what we know as Purim, they built this notion precisely into the fabric of the day. And I'll explain. The Trumas HaDeshen, one of the Rishonim, was asked a very simple question. could you give a gift of a fancy for Mishloach Manos? Could you fulfill the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos with a fancy tie, a fancy belt, Gucci belt, Louis Vuitton shoes? Could you fulfill the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos with some nice begadim? Shmuel Hadeshin says, absolutely not. I think we all know, of course, it has to be food, but listen why. Says the Shmuel Hadeshin, because the reason why Chazal, at that point in history, the time of Mordechai and Esther, established the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos, because they wanted to ensure that every Jew in the world has food for their Purim Seuda. You hear that? It's not enough for me to have my Purim Seuda. It's not enough for me to have wine. It's not enough for me to have meat. It's not enough for me to have whatever I'm going to be eating at my Purim Seuda. It's my responsibility. It's every Jew's responsibility to make sure that every other Jew in the world in my community has food for their Purim Seuda. And that's what the mitzvah Mishloach Manos is. And that's why Chazal instituted Mishloach Manos as the tikkun for what they wanted to fix when they established the Yontif of Purim. Because this is what Mordechai HaYehudi teaches us, that I'm not safe until every Jew around me is also safe. I think we could explain a new insight into a pasuk that we're all familiar with. At the very end of the David, Tehillim Perach of Zion, the concluding pasuk is Kaveil Hashem, Chazak V'yameitz Libecha. V'kaveil Hashem. Repeating those three words, Kaveil Hashem, hope to Hashem, Davin to Hashem. Chazak V'yameitz Libecha, be strong of heart, V'kaveil Hashem, and Davin to Hashem again, and have hope to Hashem again. So Chazal, Rashi quotes Chazal, who explain what it means is the following. It means sometimes you daven, and you daven, and you daven, and Hashem doesn't answer your tefillos. So what's the Jewish response? We don't give up. We daven again. Kaveil Hashem. You daven to Hashem. Chazak, strengthen yourself. If it didn't work, Kaveil Hashem. Daven again. Hope to Hashem again. Don't give up. But maybe we could explain with a different twist. You daven to Hashem. Kaveil Hashem. You daven to Hashem. And guess what? He did answer your tefillos. He gave you exactly what you wanted. But there's another Jew who still needs something. You go back to the siddur. You go back to the shul. You go back to your tehillim. The kaveil Hashem. You daven again, not because you didn't get your tefillos answered. You got your tefillos answered. But there's another Jew who needs the tefillos, who needs this tefillah. Go back, kaveil Hashem. Daven a second time, not for you, but daven for another Jew. I just want to finish with a story that I think illustrates very clearly this beautiful midah of not feeling shalem if somebody else isn't shalem. This story happened in the 90s. Those of you who have roots in Brooklyn know them, the Syrian community in Brooklyn. There was a well-known Jew named, a very big Baal Chesed named Joey Beda. Joey Beda was very involved with the Sephardic Bikur Cholim, I think, and maybe the Sephardic Community Center on Ocean Parkway. Joey Beda started with selling shmatas, like many Syrian businesses started selling shmatas, and then he built up a linen factory, and they were one of the providers of linen for Walmart, which is the best account you could have in America is Walmart, right? So, as Walmart grew, so Joey Beda's company also grew, and anybody in the business always wants to get a chance to sell to Walmart. So because Joey Beda had a long-standing relationship, he always, he met with Walmart. He went to Bentonville, Arkansas every so often. He brought his products and they figured out what line they would carry of Joey Beda's linens. And there was one trip that Joey Beda learned with a fellow named Rabbi Shlomo Kanarek from Lakewood. He's a rabbi that used to learn with Joey Beda. And Joey Beda said, Rabbi Kanarek, I have to go down to Arkansas, to Bentonville, Arkansas, for a meeting with a buyer from Walmart. And there's going to be a lot of downtime. Maybe you come with me and we'll learn. You'll learn with me on the way, on the trip, between meetings. We'll learn together. So they go together to Bentonville, Arkansas, to the Walmart headquarters. And they were waiting in the office to meet with the buyer, who's going to, to look at their line. As they're sitting there in the waiting room and they're looking at whatever book they were looking at, they're learning together, they're looking at a sefer, Joy Beta notices that this guy walking up and down the hallway of the waiting room. And he can't concentrate on his learning. He says, excuse me, Rabbi Kanarek. He goes to this fellow and says, excuse me, I see you look very, is everything okay? Something wrong? I see you're pacing back and forth. And the fellow said, this is one of his competitors, also in the linen industry, one of Joey Beda's competitors. And the competitor said, well, yeah, I know that you, Joey, you have a big company. You get, meetings with Walmart without a problem. But all of us little guys, we die. We're all dying to get a meeting. There must have been a miscommunication. I thought I had an appointment. I came here. I drove down all the way from from wherever I was coming from with my truck, my car, and I got here and the secretary says that I don't have an appointment with the buyer. And I don't know what to do. I traveled for so long. I was waiting for this break to get into Walmart, and you know, there's a miscommunication. So Joey says, you know what, hold a minute. Let me see what I could do. So Joey Beta goes into the buyer and he says, you know, they knew each other, and he says to the buyer for Walmart, you know, would you be able to meet with that fellow outside, whatever his name is? And the buyer says, no, that's fine. We don't really need to. I'm very happy with your line. You have a good line, and you provide us what we need, and you have your stock and your inventory meets our requirements. I'm good with where we are. I don't need to meet him. And Joey says, no, I really want you to meet him. The buyer says, but I don't understand. He's your competitor. Why do you want me to give your competitor a chance? And Joey says, there's room for everybody. Everybody's entitled to make a buck. So, okay. The buyer says, okay, you want me to meet with him? I'll meet with him. So Joey runs outside and tells this fellow who's walking up and down the office, the office, saying, you know what? I got you a meeting. I got you. He's happy to meet with you. The fellow at first says, oh my gosh, that's wonderful. And then all of a sudden, his head drops and says, but because I didn't know that I was going to have the meeting, I have all my stuff in the truck. After he wants to meet me now, and I don't have my stuff here. Joey Beta says, no problem. Come, Rabbi Kanarek, let's go. And the three of them, Rabbi Kanarek, Joey Beta, and this competitor, goes out to the truck, schleps in all the boxes. That's what it means. One Jew is not Shalem until every other Jew is Shalem. We should be zochet to take the message that Mordechai and Esther wanted to communicate to us by telling us, Kacha ye'aseh lo'ish, Asher melech hafetz bikaro. Mordechai reminding us of that free pass that the chalutza has. After chalitza, she's free. So too Mordechai could have been free. And instead he says, Klal Yisrael are in trouble. I'm still in trouble. I'm not a free bird. We should be zochet to always, when we look at other Jews, we look at what we have, the brachas that we have, and we realize that not everybody has the brachas that we have. We should always feel that we still have to ask Hashem for other people. We always have to share what we have, the brach that we have, with others. So I just want to thank you all for joining. And wish you a wonderful...